Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Google has many ways they're taking over the world. We'll show you that next.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Bridget, whose man's a midget?
Hey.
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. As always, I'm Joe Braswell, and I'm joined by my man, Akili Shine.
Akili Shine, man. In the building, man. This Souls of Mischief, bruh.
Souls of Mischief. There's a lot of people out of the Bay Area.
Old Town.
1992/93. Yeah, very good time for hip hop. Interesting time in hip hop.
I would posit that it was the best time for hip hop.
Yeah. Okay. I would have to agree.
I mean, just in terms of, I mean, from a production standpoint, uh-huh. even to a lyrical standpoint, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of great IP was created in that window of time from yep. like 91 to like, I would say even 96, you know.
You get a shift, you know, well, that kind of started around, I would say, you know, late 80s or 89 with De La and mm-hmm. Jungle Brothers and
Tribe.
Mm-hmm. But kind of went on through. You see that in Souls of Mischief. You saw it in Far Side.
Exactly. I mean, West Coast Renaissance, essentially, in that time, too. You know,
very specific. We kind of went from just straight gangster rap and very, you know.
Yeah. Showing more diversification.
Roger and Zap samples to some other
Soul,
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my wheelhouse. I was 45. 93.
Holy smokes.
But welcome to Geek Nerd Tech. Lots to talk about today. One thing I do want to talk about before we get into some things are the Emmys. Because we didn't get a chance to talk Emmys. We did a little Emmy preview.
Mm-hmm.
We got some Emmy results. I mean, a lot of good stuff for black folks. A lot of good stuff for non-traditional people coming up.
Yeah.
They're kind of breaking that mold. We teased the old school mode of like Frasier winning every year.
Yeah.
First of all, did you watch?
Did watch.
Okay. What did you think of the broadcast itself and Jimmy, and then what did you think of the results?
I thought Jimmy was funny. I thought he had some great moments. I mean, he was kind of going for people's heads a bit.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Kind of what he does.
Exactly. I loved it. I thought he held up and he did a great job. In terms of the diversity and representation of winners, I think we definitely had some moments with that as well. And, you know, proud for Regina taking home two in a row.
She's a killer.
Definitely killing. And that was one of my favorite shows, American Crime. I love that show.
Yeah. The show that I continue to sleep on because I'm a moron.
Show's dope, man. Yeah. And man. I mean, overall, I thought it was entertaining and great. And I mean, we just interviewed the president of FX the other day, and yep. FX as a network had the most wins of anybody. Netflix, HBO, everybody included. FX had the most. That's crazy.
They're doing ridiculously incredible work. I mean, just this last year, just with Fargo season 2 and People versus OJ alone,
right?
They're dominating. Then you sprinkle in all their series,
exactly,
and then they're premiering with new series like Atlanta and Better
and
Things.
And which I'm caught up, by the way.
No, I want to get your take on that too. Yes, Better Things, and yeah, man, I don't know. Like, it's good. I agree with you. I thought, you know, the telecast itself, I thought was good. I thought it was pretty, you know, the actual Emmy. I like the way the producers put the Emmy telecast kind of in the background, so there wasn't a lot of like crazy montages or a bunch of sketches or a bunch of like stuff that they had to do or performances.
Well, they've done in previous years.
Yeah, right. They just kind of put the whole thing in the background, let Jimmy step up and shine. Jimmy was solid.
Yeah,
he was self-deprecating as well as kind of went for people's heads.
Yeah,
and like this is TV, so let's not take ourselves very seriously.
Right.
It was great.
I mean, the Bill Cosby joke.
That was good. That was silence in that
man,
piece.
My goodness,
silence. He has a good one. The Matt Damon thing was funny,
right?
And I think Jimmy, you know, Jimmy's my, you know, people a lot talk about, you know, Fallon, who's great, and you know, and Conan and all those other folks, but like Jimmy and James Corden, but Jimmy's kind of like been a slow creeper. He's a guy, he's just outworking everyone. He's worked so hard for a guy that was just a radio guy, mm-hmm. not a comedian, not super like, you know, funny, but not a stand up,
mm-hmm.
and for him to just kind of work his way up from 12 o'clock. From the radio to that, from the man show to 12 o'clock to like, you know, he's up there.
Definitely up there.
He's doing a great job. So I think he's kind of like, like the tortoise in the sense that no, he's not splashy, but he's just working, you know, like Cal Ripken or somebody.
Moving forward, man.
Anyway, I enjoyed. I was very, very happy to see my girl Tatiana Maslany win. Mm-hmm. I was actually out of my chair for that. It was great. I thought my man Chris Darden's, like, I'm drawing blank on my actor's name. His speech was fantastic. The speeches were great. The Asian brother's speech, Aziz's partner, was great.
Absolutely.
A lot of diversity talk in there.
Someone Aziz's partner.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. I thought, you know, all the stuff, all the Jill Soloway stuff and Jeffrey Tambor stuff on transgender was great. It was just a really good sort of reflection, feels like a reflection of the town in a positive way.
Yeah, it's definitely going in a positive way.
Yeah. It's still not like there.
Of course. But it's
not the Oscars either.
It's progress. You know?
Yeah. All right. So moving on, but real quick, before we jump into these tech stories and tech news, I do want to ask you specifically about Atlanta. We don't have a lot of pop culture in the show, so we'll get the pop culture all the way at the top. You watched, you're in. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, all the things that we kind of outlined last week in terms of the cinematography and the way that it's constructed and the usage of humor, all those things are great. I love what they're able to do in the span of 30 to 45 minutes. Like, I think it's great. I was a bit shook by the epithets that were being used. I didn't know that they were going that hard with it.
Especially with the F-bombs.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea.
N-bombs, F-bombs.
Yeah. One of them was really jarring to me. I was like, whoa! I was like, holy smokes!
Right.
But I mean, I get the dialogue they want people to have around that word, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm interested to see narratively where it goes. I love the setting of the table and the environment, and you know, getting the characters to kind of emerge with their character descriptions and all that stuff. But I think overall the show is awesome, and I'm glad that it got renewed for season 2 already. I think that it's phenomenal, man.
Yeah, I agree. I want to talk specifically about, I don't know if this is what you're talking about, but specifically about episode 4, because it deals a lot, you know, speaking to our show, it deals a lot with sort of technology and social media and sort of the rise of social media stars and kind of what that means and doesn't mean as it relates to music and culture and hip-hop culture and youth culture and millennial culture. I thought it was very, very, very well done. I think it was just above satire. It wasn't even like a satire. It was like pretty, pretty spot on.
Absolutely.
Also funny, poignant, made you think about stuff.
Yeah.
I like my man, the Asian guy, who was like the mysterious race dude dropping the N-bombs everywhere, having everybody look, what are you? All that was just so extremely well done, written by Donald Glover. What did you, do you have any specific takeaways from that one? Or
that's the one I was referring to.
Oh, okay, that's the one where you're like, oh!
Yeah, I was like, whoa! But I definitely like the themes that are being explored, you know, from, you know, I guess prison industrial complex, that scene where, I mean, it's not prison, but it's jail, where, you know, all these black men are in jail.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't want to give it away, but the brutality in that one scene.
That's a crazy scene.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
crazy, because you go from like laughing, as everyone does, to this is real.
Exactly.
And in a weird way that's like, it's shocking, but not surprising. You're like, oh, well, that's what you know.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
And I mean, and I think this is what makes, this is the last note I'll have, I think this is what makes a good story. And what makes good characters, rather, is their conflict, obviously, and them exploring the various contradictions that they have. And so I think each character has huge conflicts, huge contradictions. Like, in one sense, you know, trying to do right, but in another sense, you know, they're confused and misdirected. And so I think the collision of those two things and how they're, you know, unraveling through the course of the season, I think is pretty fresh. And each character, right. Like, from my man's baby mama to... Mm-hmm. To Paperboy, to everybody has their own set of issues that they're trying to explore and unravel and deal with, and I like the fact that it has the degree of authenticity.
Yeah, so. My man, I think his name is Darius. The best friend is like quickly becoming like one of the best characters in TV. Like, with his complexity, he's like a really like,
talking about the Snoop character.
Yeah, oh, yeah. The guy that basically he's sort of funny, complex, like, you know, it's just all of it's really, really great. And the humor is very dry. No one's laughing. No one's smiling. No one's cracking jokes, you know, but of the three main characters. I don't think any of them ever smile. Like,
yeah, they smiled a few times. But I get what you're saying, though.
Yeah, but in terms of Paperboy, I haven't seen his Paperboy smile once. Like, yeah, every his whole expressions is like, you're all ridiculous. I think that like the other one, other thing I wanted to say was about as it relates to their use was interesting too. The use of children in this and the way they talk about kids, both in this episode and I think it was episode two, yeah, when the kids find out it was Paperboy and they're playing, they're shooting each other. Yeah. Paperboy, bitch! Yeah. Mention each other, and his like bewilderment of that. But like this last one is, it just reminded me of that old Dave Chappelle bit, you know, with the baby coming through the window. Like it was,
a kid was going off.
Like, was, I don't know. I'm always like a guy who does not like that. Like I don't like seeing like, you know, 5 year olds curse or 9 year olds cuss like that. But that was funny to me.
Last note, I already said that last note from before, but this one I thought was very potent. In the sense of their exploration of I guess the poverty complex, how a lot of Black folks, because they are trying to, you know, get their ends met and dealing with survivability of putting food on the table and keeping, you know, a warm home, they don't have the luxury or the flexibility to have strategic investments. And so having, I keep forgetting the dude's name or the other character, but having his thought process, like, I'm going to do this, this, and this to be able to flip this to get this. Yeah. And it might take a little bit longer to grab it, but I'm about to have some stacks.
He flipped that 170 into three stacks.
That to me was genius. And just the fact that they posited that as something that we should probably like have more conversation about. Like, don't, let's not always be so short-sighted. Let's kind of have some long game, some long vision too. So.
Right. And the journey through that was hilarious. I mean, I thought that was all very well done. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I mean, and props to Glover, man. The writing's good. I mean, I think there's a good team. The writing and directing together, and the acting is a really good. It feels like a very good creative expression.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm happy for all of them and all involved.
And the imagery.
Yeah, and everybody involved. Okay, so into technology. A lot of Google. One of the things I want to talk about is Google has unveiled something called Google Trips, which people are calling like one of the best travel apps ever. Basically, it's called Google Trips, and it allows you to sort of it takes it one step further than like a Kayak or anything else. Not only does it allow you to sort of book your travel and hotels, but you can create an itinerary, which doesn't sound like it's that amazing, but when you incorporate all of the Google technology like Maps and the search engine, which is Google, which is ubiquitous, and you can create this sort of like your entire trip that's on your smartphone that is you can map your stops, your food, your travel, everything else. And I guess in the example they showed, you're traveling somewhere and you have no Wi-Fi, it's already all on your phone, already downloaded, ready to go. I think it's kind of smart. It's just a way to use all the tools we already use, but sort of combine them into one. So what do you think of this?
I agree. I think it's using all the tools that one would use when abroad or traveling, and, you know, putting it in a centralized location. I think for Google, it's just another opportunity for them to mine information, because that's what they're doing, to be able to make these recommendations for you. They're going into your Gmail account and looking for certain phrases and words that enable them to recommend, hey, you should eat here, or you should go here, because your set of preferences kind of pointed into that direction. So, I mean, I think that's a smart way for Google to be able to leverage that information, and maybe possibly segue that into, you know, some more ad game, because it's offering for other businesses to be able to get their storefront, you know, in front of eyes in a different way. But I don't know if I personally would use this if I'm traveling. I would kind of, I don't know. I would have to, like, you know, play with the app a little bit more and just explore that first. But it just seems like a whatever app, you know. I don't think I would be in Paris and, oh, let me use the Google Travel app real quick. I don't think that would happen, you know.
Well, I think that what they want to get you to do is, it's all about the planning stage, in theory. Like, right, so when you're at home planning the stuff on your computer, you got it all planned out. You have your whole trip planned. You upload that to your phone or plan on your phone. So when you're already out there, it's a folder. You open it up and your whole to there. I agree. I will not be like, where am I going today? Let me pull up my Google Travel app. However, if I did do, which I often do, all the research, the restaurants, the museums, and this and that, you know, what you're going to do, and loaded that somewhere, I might use that. Yeah. I might use that as a plan, but not. But it all eats into your ability to how much planning ahead do you do? There's right. certain kinds of travelers who are very yeah. experiential. There's certain types of travelers who
like... Loosey-goosey.
Yeah. Some people like want to know everything, and yeah. I'm kind of in between. Sometimes I want to know everything,
right.
and sometimes I kind of want to experience. So, I don't know. I like the idea. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see how other giants like Facebook and others and Twitter maybe incorporate some of the same stuff. But what they can't do is you know, this is another way that Google is... You know, even more so than Apple, just really, it's kind of a flex move. Like, we're everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, we our search is so strong, our presence is so strong, we got your flights, we got your cars, we got your hotel, mm-hmm. we got the map, we yeah. got the, you know, the ratings.
Absolutely.
You know, so, you want to watch a YouTube clip, like, whatever you want, you know, watch a movie, we got you.
Yeah.
So, it's interesting. So, we'll see how that plays out. Next, Google is doing something on October 4th. I don't know what it is, but they're unveiling something. Is it? I mean, it's a phone. Is it an app that's a part of a phone? Is it media? But they're doing a whole rollout, video and especially like in New York City, a lot of these. I think we have showed if you're watching on YouTube, they have like this giant, you know, sort of a I don't know what
it's a rectangle.
It. Yeah, like it's a rectangle. It's the shape of the phone. Mm-hmm. And if you look, and it's also on sides of buildings, mm-hmm. and it just has the rectangle. Looks like the shape of a smartphone with October 4th. The video is interesting because it has the search bar, as we know it, as a search bar, and expands from a search bar into the rectangle size of a phone. So, what are your predictions? What do you think this is?
I think it's some hardware. I think that it's probably going to be a smartphone. They need to still be in that market and compete. And I feel like that they're going to drop it on October 4th, obviously. I don't know if it's going to be earth-shattering or something that is actually newsworthy, but, you know, we'll see. I love the ambiguity and the strategy of keeping it kind of, like, tucked and having people ask questions, like, what's going on? I love that part about right. it, but I hope that strategy, you know, there's a payoff at the end. You know, I hope that they come with some really advanced technology, which I don't think they will.
Well, what's interesting about the strategy is it makes you wonder, are they dropping the product or the app on October 4th, or are they announcing it on October 4th? Because any rollout, you can't just drop it on October 4th. Like, who's going to run out and get it? I don't know. Right. I don't know what it is. Like, you know,
it's probably an announcement. They're just, you know, putting the red carpet down first and, getting people, you know, interested.
Okay. Another Google, this is an all Google all the time story. Google is stepping up its sort of social arm here, and they're actually doing a thing which I think is kind of interesting. It's gotten all of its YouTube stars and they're doing this campaign called Vote IRL, which is, I don't know. I'm a Gen Xer. I'm not a millennial, so it just seems kind of corny to me. I don't know if this resonates with millennials or not. But
what's corny about it?
Well, on paper, I mean, just the hashtag's corny to me.
Oh, okay.
But the name of the campaign. But on paper, yes, you take all these YouTube stars, which like combined have in the billions of views, right? Combined, yeah. You know. So they're definitely, if you take those 8 to 10 YouTube stars, you're talking mm-hmm. about a billions of views. So right. you can argue that their reach is stronger than Trump's or Clinton's, you know, in millennials,
absolutely.
What they're absolutely doing right now. So yeah. the idea of, and also Google's very aware of what people are talking about, what people are sharing, what people are, or what are in comment sections, mm-hmm. what are in comment sections of YouTube videos, what, you know, all this stuff. They have all this data.
Yes, they do.
So what they're able to say is that this is the most talked about election, and people do care. Millennials are involved, and they do. They are online about it, but it's not translating to actually voting.
Right.
So get out and vote in real life. Vote IRL. I like the idea of the campaign. It just seems a little corny, but what do you think?
I don't think it's corny. I think it's meeting the people where they are, you know, and the people, the millennial generation that's going to be voting in this election, where they are is on YouTube. They're on Facebook. They're on Twitter. They're on Snapchat. They're on Instagram. So to be able to leverage, you know, the influence of some of the YouTube stars that are producing and developing content that people follow, and, you know, trying to empower people in the sense that they have a voice and they're able to exercise their citizenship through voting, I think it makes a strong case because you'd rather hear it from someone that, you know, reflects you, looks like you, that's in your peer group versus some old geezer telling you to vote. So
yeah.
I get it from that perspective.
Do you think it'll work? I agree with you. The campaign idea is great.
Right.
I mean, you gotta do something.
Do I think it'll work?
Do you think it'll get millennials out into the streets and activate them to vote?
I don't think that solely will do it. I think that, you know, more than ever, I think people are more dialed in. Especially younger folks are more dialed in than ever because of technology and because mm-hmm. of the access to information. And, you know, we're learning 24/7. We're learning all the time. We're engaged with a piece of content all the time. So I think people, generally speaking, are more dialed in. And I think people, generally speaking, are more apathetic. So I'm on the fence about whether or not it'll work as it relates to people going to the voting polls and actually exercising that right. But in terms of awareness, I think it will work.
Right.
But I don't know if it'll translate into them actually, like I said, voting. So right.
What I like about this is it's a way, like, this is what's interesting to me about this is that, you know, the right they have a tendency to make technology companies and technology a partisan thing.
Yeah.
Like Facebook, they're you know, just by
the game is rigged.
Right. Just by Facebook being involved in anything at all, it's like, okay, well, clearly we know where their loyalties lie.
Mm-hmm.
Google, we know where their loyalties mm-hmm. lie. Well, Google is beyond partisanship. Everyone uses Google. Google is ubiquitous. And frankly, the idea of talking and trying to get millennials to vote or even get, you know, getting, you know, people of color to vote mm-hmm. or, you know, we're getting blacks and Latinos to vote. That's not partisan. And now it does, obviously it's bad for one side, better for one side, because you do know if millennials and Latinos and black folks vote, then we all know whether this is kind of a landslide. But, and you know, one side is about keeping those people from voting. So it's just, I'm just kind of commenting on the criticism.
I think the criticism is retarded.
Being involved.
It's retarded. It's ridiculous. Shut up.
Yeah, all right, we can move on. Well said. I do want to talk to you about our friends at DraftKings, because it is football season and fantasy football season is here. As I talk about, I play every week. Right now I am winning in one league, losing in another, but I am always winning on DraftKings because, you know, I got to start for free. I got to play every week. And I won money. I know people who won big money. There's a dude who just won $1 million in some contest last week. Like that I know a guy who knows a guy who won that money. So maybe he can give me some of that money. The guy knows a guy. Anyway, DraftKings.com, as you know, it's the biggest fantasy football contest around. It's the destination to play fantasy football. You don't have to play a whole season. You can play one game at a time. Sorry, 1 week at a time. You can go against your buddies. You can go against your friends. You can go against the entire league. You can win your share of a lot of money. No season long commitments. It's fun. You can figure out way like to be what kind of GM you really are by picking your players. What you want to do is go to DraftKings.com now. Choose your players for this weekend's contest. Enter our promo code GEEK. You can play for free with your first deposit. That's promo code GEEK to play for free. You can share in over $1 million in total prizes this weekend only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. Check out the website for details.
Let's go. Let's go.
DraftKings is the place to be.
Yeah, it is.
Continue with our Google Palooza. Seriously,
man.
Google's vision of driverless cars, it seems to be here. The government seems to step in and taking some steps to say, well, before they were worried about, like, you know, cars not having brakes for the passenger, cars having steering wheels. So now they're kind of like loosening up on that. The NHTSA, which is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, a board I've never heard of in my entire life.
Oh yeah, I got my cousin. He works for.
Oh that. Yeah, it's NTSA. I've never heard of that. Anyway, they've got a new policy, and they want people to submit a 15-point safety assessment where automakers can talk about how and why this will work, and it seems to be this is loosening up. So they're coming, right?
I mean, it's loosening up in the sense that, you know, they're even allowing them to make the argument.
Yeah.
Because before, it was like, yo, you can't even argue your case. Like, right. Nah, this is not safe. We're not going to even promote this idea because it could be destructive. So, right. But I love the fact that there's a little bit more flexibility, and it's giving these, you know, these innovations an opportunity to actually, you know, see the light of day. And I believe, like, we're right there. The technology is already there. We just need, you know, we need the legalities to kind of lessen and be less restrictive so that, you know, we can actually start to really propel the technology forward.
Yeah.
And I think Google, you know, has always been a proponent of this, and probably like the one of the first to be able to bring this technology to market. So I'm interested to see what Tesla does, what Google does, as it relates to these, like I said, these flexible legalities. So
I, you know, one thing I never wondered, never understood about driverless cars, which I understand in urban areas, in the cities, L.A., New York, Chicago, like, how do they park? I mean, are they just dropping you off on the curb?
What do you mean?
I mean, like, if you roll up to a spot, like, even outside here, it's all parallel parking, there's no parking, they search for a spot?
We have cars now that park themselves. Why can't they park themselves?
No, I understand the idea of them getting to the destination, but how do they look for a parking spot?
Oh,
you know, I mean, like, there's no parking. They scan the block for parking spots?
How do they look for a street sign? How do they look to turn right? I mean, yeah, they scan. They have the car's going to have cameras.
Wow, that's interesting. I mean, but are they able to say, like, oh, here's a spot. It's not red.
Right.
I can back in there.
Well, like, how does it read the sign? You can't park here.
How do you know what this is? Like, oh, that's the stuff I'm really curious about, especially because in the city, in the suburbs, whatever, you pull in a parking lot, it's all good. You pull in the driveway. But in the city, you can't do that.
It's very interesting.
So, you know, and even more importantly, even if they're dropping you off, even if it's just like an Uber, are you double parking? How do you know? Is there signs, construction? They dropping you off? Is there a bus behind you honking at you? Am I getting out in traffic? Like, this is the stuff I want to know.
I think that's easily solvable. I think I would be more concerned of, like, what's going to happen when I'm looking at a red light, or I'm looking at a yellow light that's about to turn red, and what the car's going to do. I'm more concerned with that.
Yeah, what's the car's going to do? Like, is the car going to make cars like, I can make it?
I can't make it.
Yeah, or we talk about all the time, the ethical questions. You know, there's a dog on one side and a little kid in the other. Like, what's going to happen? Or us.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway, we'll see. We'll see.
Yes, indeed.
Moving forward, Google Palooza. Google Messenger has a new app. They've gotten rid of, I think they've got, well, I still use not GChat, but the Google Hangouts. But they've got this new app coming, which is sort of like a mix between Messenger and Snapchat and Insta and all these other things. It doesn't really allow for advertisers to get up in there, but the way it works and sort of incorporating search and what you're talking, how you're talking, it seems to have people excited. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. What do you?
You look at the iPhone and the whole messaging capabilities that we're able to do now.
Yeah,
what that's creating for new developers and various apps that are out there. You know, it's creating a new business, a new industry. And I think that Google wants to be a part of that. Like, Snapchat obviously is in that industry. Facebook is in that industry. So Google, being as ubiquitous as it is, cannot not be in the industry.
Right.
So I think having, you know, their own messaging service, and obviously they have their own phones, but having their own messaging service that allows for this type of communication where you are able to use stickers and various other pieces of content to sell. Like, for instance, like if I use a sticker of a Starbucks cup, you know, that in a way that's promoting Starbucks to whoever I'm sending it to, even though it's like just a sticker, and I'm like, hey, I want some coffee, and I send you a sticker, like, in a way that's marketing still of the product. And so I think utilizing those type of things, I think will take them a long way. And I think that's what Apple's doing, that's what Facebook's doing, and Snapchat. So hey, they want to get in front of those eyeballs too. So
cool.
I'm mad at it.
All right, do you want to talk about our friends at GA?
Sure, man. We got some really good stuff happening with General Assembly. And if you're looking for a career in tech, maybe it's in business or data design, or maybe even marketing, you're trying to get that promotion or maybe even a raise to excel in your career, you need the 21st century training and skills. And General Assembly is the place to be. It's the largest and most respected school worldwide for people seeking to grow their talents and master the marketplace. And whether it's learning remotely online or in person at one of their beautiful campuses, you can join the 350,000 people who have already gotten the training needed to propel careers in tech and business. More than 2,500 companies hire GA graduates, with 99% of graduates who participate in GA's career services land a new role in their field within 6 months of training, of starting their job search. Excuse me. I think that is amazing. So again, that's landing a role in the field within 6 months of starting their job search. So take control of your talent and career now, and find out more at ga.co/geek. That's ga.co/geekgeek. Enter the promo code geek to save on your first class workshop or event. Once again, that's ga.co/geek, code word geek. General Assembly is the place to be, y'all.
General Assembly, online, or beautiful campus, learn to trade. While we're here, I do want to talk to you about Audible. Audible is actually one of my favorite things in the world because I love audiobooks. And Audible is, I consume a lot of podcasts. If you listen to this, you probably consume podcasts as well. So I like to listen to my books as well. Audible is a situation where you can have an unmatched selection of audiobooks. You can check it out anytime. It's your best sort for in-traffic entertainment, as they call it. You can do it through the Audible app. It makes listening a breeze. It features like chapter navigation, narration speed control. You can listen to it fast as you want, so you can slow it down. You can do double speed, try and get through a book faster, because some of these books are like 13, 14 hours long. You can even share your favorite audio excerpts with friends. If you liked a part of the book, a funny part of the book, you can send that out as a clip, which is great to get other members involved. It's really cool. And also, Audible members have free to short stories, ad-free podcasts, news, comedy, and more. If you're listening to anything at all, you should check out Audible, even as a way to listen to podcasts. It's actually a great way to do that. Because I listen to everything right now, I'm listening to the CAA book, Powerhouse on CAA, which is a great book. I'm listening to that. It's an oral history, so it's really great to listen to that way. But if you have any suggestions or what we should be listening to, please tweet at us at Joe K. Braswell or at Achilles Shine, hashtag AudibleGNT. Let us know what we should be listening to because we need some suggestions. But check out Audible today. Today you can start a 30-day trial. Download your first audiobook for free. Go to audible.com/GNT to get started. That's audible.com/GNT for a 30-day free trial and get some books.
Man, get your knowledge up.
Yes. Scripted. Fiction or nonfiction. I was going to say scripted or non-scripted, but it's all scripted because they're books. Anyway, moving forward, I like this story a lot. Facebook is expanding its campaign to combat hate speech. Again, this is what I touched on earlier with the thing, these tech companies sort of getting involved in things. So Facebook and Google have their own giant think tanks. I don't think Facebook's is called. Google's is called Jigsaw. It sounds like an organization. But and in these think tanks, they've come to the realization that, you know, you can't really stop hate speech. In other words, people recruiting, you know, people for ISIS or hate groups. You can't really stop that chatter with censorship. Before it was like, you just shut them all down. The minute you hear anything, shut them all down. So what they're doing, they're trying something called these counter-narratives, counter-posts to sort of to combat that. And I think this is an interesting way to go about it without having people scream censorship. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think it's an interesting way to go about it, in the sense that they're even offering marketing money, marketing dollars, to be able to help, you know, offset some of this negative commentary that we find a lot, you know, on social media. And I like the fact that they're willing to put their money where their mouth is, in the sense that they'll help promote, a more positive environment, and still, you know, it's still for those that want to be salacious with their speech and say, you know, destructive things. Yeah. I mean, they still have the right to do that, but in terms of how it's received, that's being offset because you're having a louder and larger bullhorn that's, you know, like you said, misdirecting that type of languaging, essentially, you know, reducing it. So yeah. I like it.
I would love to be a fly on the wall or be involved in one of those think tanks. The Jigsaw think tank, I would love to see what those people are talking about. Running out of time, I'm gonna go through these quick hits. Use these last stories as quick hits. Just your thoughts on them real quick. Apple is in talks to buy McLaren. Why, and what do you think of that?
I mean, it's always been at least a theory at this point that Apple wants to get in the automotive business. And they want to get into the autonomous, you know, car business.
Well, McLaren.
Because McLaren is. They have the top tier, you know, engines and what they're doing excellence. In terms of, they represent excellence. And I think having that brand marriage with Apple makes perfect sense.
Yep.
And not just that, McLaren, you know, supplies a lot of its parts to other vehicles.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they might be the most technologically savvy to pair with Apple, but there's been no confirmation as to what, you know, what they might do, but I think it's great. I think it's cool.
And it could have a lot to do, like you said, with the other parts they're using, could have a lot about their assembly line process, mm-hmm. how they put together their cars, where they put together their cars, all these other factors that doesn't necessarily mean McLaren's will see the Apple sign on McLaren's as is, because they're talking about making a whole new car that we don't know about.
Right.
So that's interesting. AT&T wants to make every telephone pole an ultra-fast wireless hotspot. It's a really smart idea to take existing telephone poles and then put place... Like, not built up building these giant towers everywhere. You take the existing poles, drop a thing on top of it, and we have wireless everywhere, which will be akin to like what you see in Japan or Europe or other countries. That sounds good to me, except for the part about AT&T dominating everything, but you know, it's either them or Google.
Hey, I think this is an excellent idea. I mean, we talk about infrastructure. Like, yeah, why not use the infrastructure that's already there and augment it or change it slightly versus like start from scratch and like, you know, laying fiber all across the oceans of the planet, or, you know, doing it in terms of building more towers or putting satellites up and all that stuff. I think having that incorporation, having that incorporated into what's already standing, I think is a great solution. I'd be interested to see how competitive it would be, because if it's just AT&T doing it, like how would the other big guys get involved in that? And then how would you protect it? You know, how would you maintain that it's fluid and it's working and but I can see it. Like when I read this article, I was like, yeah, this is actually a really great suggestion.
Yeah.
Like, wonder why this hasn't been explored, you know, years ago.
I think it has probably to do with just the sheer manpower of outfitting those. It has to do with what telecom companies own what. Like, can you just get up on poles and put stuff on there? Like, why can't Verizon do it? Why can't it be AT&T? Like, exactly. So all of that stuff regionally must be something one or another. I agree, it's really interesting. Yahoo just disclosed that over 500 million people's accounts were stolen, and done by a state... a state-sponsored actor, meaning like Russia or China, or North Korea or South Korea.
Right.
And that's scary, especially with the thing I find about that's interesting is Verizon just bought Yahoo.
No, not yet.
Oh, really?
The deal's being done.
Oh, okay. So I was going to say they're doing that deal and Yahoo didn't disclose that. Oh, by the way. Yeah. But that's a big deal. Now Yahoo says, don't worry, no financial information has been stolen. But
I don't believe them. I don't believe
500 them. Million?
I don't believe anything they have to say. And the fact that they said, I think, we just found this out last week. I don't believe that either. You were keeping that information because you're trying to get the deal done with Verizon.
Of course.
And having that information is actually going to smear the brand. It's going to devalue the brand. And why would anyone want to buy it, knowing that you have this huge hack? You can't protect, you know, you can't protect people's rights and information. Like, why would I want to be associated with that?
Absolutely.
So they kept that under wraps for sure.
And also, as we know, they you know, Yahoo went from being valued at $16 billion to selling for $4.3 billion or $4.5 billion. So, yeah, who knows what this would have done to them. They might have been in the M's.
Exactly.
You know?
We could have bought them.
$500 million. Exactly. Like, that's crazy. So, anyway, yeah, it's interesting. And last but not least, looks like Nike finally has the self-lacing shoes as seen in Back to the Future. They're really... you know, using them as a non-gimmicky thing. They're saying, like, this is some dope technology, and this is a really cool way to, you know, sort of, I don't know. This is they're making as cool athletic-inspired technology and not like a gimmick. Man, what do you think?
I think this is great. I mean, I'd be interested to see how it feels and what it does and how it's able to differentiate when I'm actually exercising or when I'm just chilling, sitting down. Or like if how tight I need the laces or how loose I need the laces. Like, but I love the fact that it's able to do that. And man, it's just crazy thinking that, you know, that's what was presented in Back to the Future is a reality now. Even though it's not the same exact shoe, but the fact that, you know, you have to plug in your shoes, that it's like, that to me is crazy. It has a light on it.
Yeah,
like,
that's kind of goofy, but you know, no.
Hey, I mean, the video looked pretty fresh, though.
But that stuff where all that the stuff comes up in the shoe, is that real?
That's real. That's real. Yeah, that's real.
What does the shoe cost? $900?
Man, it's probably like your electric bill for the year.
I mean, that's... Anyway, interesting. All right, I think that's it. That's all we got. That's all we got for this week. Lot of stuff, man. Google's just staying in the news. That's a lot of announcements. So I guess by next week, but next time we come on, we'll have a better idea of at least come close to what's going on with with Google's announcement. But
absolutely,
that's all we got. I don't know. Where can the people find you, Akili?
Yo, they can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Akili Shine, AKILISHINE. And where can the good folks find you?
On Snapchat at Joe K. Braswell, on Instagram and Twitter at Joe K. Braswell, and right here. So that's all I got. Check us out. Thank you for joining us to GNT. We will see you next week.
Yes, sir.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Christie, Gianna Hopkins, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
I've read like two.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.